Hello and welcome to Resource Report, where we share with you important information about local nonprofits and resource organizations that support the community we share, produced by Pathways to Agency. I am your host, Rainmaker, and today we will hear all about a fabulous organization located downtown called Peer Olympia. When I walked inside, I saw along the wall to the right lots of encased flyers advertising all the different groups we will hear about later, and to the left, a few different rooms with clear glass walls, some with people having a meeting inside. Everything was in gray and white, but it felt clean and comfortable like a community center. I could see a coffee stand behind the counter where friendly-looking people smiled at me as I walked in. Soon, I was walked to the back and entered a very large room that looked out towards Legion Way, just off the corner of Franklin, where I interviewed site director Stephanie Tompkins and program manager Bree McNeely. Here's Peer Olympia.
I am here at Peer Olympia downtown at the corner of Franklin and Legion. I am meeting with
Stephanie Tompkins and Bray McNeely.
And you guys are, what do y'all do here?
I am the site director.
And you?
And I'm a program manager.
Cool. Okay. So can you please explain briefly how long Peer Olympia has been here and how it got started?
I'll try to keep it brief. In 1984, people were dying of AIDS, and so there was a thing called Susan Dunshee House, and it was people holding the hands of people dying of AIDS. And when medicine came out in the 90s, that kind of started morphing because they didn't need that service anymore, and it started morphing into behavioral health. In 2013, our CEO came in and was a volunteer, worked his way up to be the CEO, and had a vision of opening more sites. And so they rebranded. It had changed from Susan Dungey to Seattle Area Support Groups, and then it got rebranded to Peer Seattle. And then after Peer Seattle came Peer Spokane, then Peer Kent, and then Peer Olympia. And so we opened 3 years ago.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, y'all have only been here for 3 years.
3 years.
Mm-hmm. That
and a couple of months.
Wow. It feels like y'all have been here forever.
It feels that way sometimes.
Yeah.
And the 3 years we've been here, we've really embedded quickly into the community. I think that it was something the community needed and just embraced us. And I think we have over, 3,000 members at this point, something like that.
Y'all are doing some good work. Tell us about that good work you're doing. What are the services that y'all have?
So our primary service is peer coaching. That is one-on-one sessions between a coach and a recovery. People who are in recovery and have lived experience. So our coaches all go through a training that we do here. And they have lived experience with really any type of recovery. That can be substance use, that can be mental health, it can be chronic illness, trauma, being part of a group that is marginalized. And so we have a wide variety of coaches to meet the needs of our community. I think we have over 40 coaches and 80 recoveries. Then we also have support groups. So we have about 22 support groups that every single day we have one to three, four support groups going on. Again, a wide variety of support groups. It's mostly volunteers who come in and say, hey, I'm looking for this support group. I can't find it. And we say, we can give you training. Why don't you start one? And so it's, again, really responding to the needs of the community. We do front desk resource and referrals. So people come in asking for various resources. So we will offer that. And then we do supportive housing. So a peer who has lived experience with being either unhoused or not having stable housing, helping people navigate the systems that are in our service area. We do same thing with employment. So again, peers who have struggled with employment, helping those who are still, navigating those resources and either looking for employment or
education.
Yeah. Okay. And then we also have family navigation, which is a family member, so a loved one essentially supporting a loved one that has substance use issues. So that can be a friend, that can be, you know, an actual family member, but it's really supporting that family member to help navigate substance use resources, or just, you know, talking about how that relationship is impacting them and their own recovery.
Wow, that's really cool. That's really cool. I'd like to know, like, what does the peer coaching look like? Like, give me like, okay, I'm coming to do peer coaching.
Yep.
What would I be doing? What's going on?
That's a great question. So our peer coaches are CCAR certified through what's called a Recovery Coach Academy. It's a 5-day training that teaches people how to utilize their lived experience to help others. We are really, we don't have a particular pathway that we try to stick with or anything like that. Like, we really try to meet people where they're at. You don't have to be abstinent. You don't have to be part of like a, you know, 12-step group or anything like that. People have the option to choose whatever pathway they want. So our coaches then utilize their own lived experience. We match based on three things. So one is lived experience of, you know, they're going through something similar as the recovery. Two is that maybe the coach has achieved a goal that the recovery also wants to achieve. And three, perhaps they, the recovery wants a coach that's part of like a certain identity. So maybe we have someone who's gender nonconforming or trans, or a person of color who wants to meet with someone with that same identity. We can match based on that as well. So it's a one-on-one meeting or session that they have weekly. It's for 26 sessions. So that comes, if they meet once a week, that's 6 months. And we're really here to support the recovery and finding natural supports. So we kind of step in and then step back. We really focus on building self-efficacy within that person. So we're not going to make a phone call for them or fill out paperwork for them or anything like that. We're going to sit with them while they do it and really help support them through that anxiety or whatever they may be experiencing. And then they, once they're done, then the recoveries graduate and they can become coaches at that point if they choose to do so. So the model kind of looks like starting as a volunteer, you know, having a coach, then becoming a coach. And that's really kind of how our model works.
Like it's sort of like self-guided.
Yes.
So it's like the people coming to do the, to have received the peer counseling are kind of like, they have their own autonomy. This is when I can meet. And,
yep.
You know, if they need to change the pacing of how often mm-hmm. they come, they can do that.
Yep.
There's,
it's 100% self-guided. Mm-hmm. And we really talk about, you know, not fixing people, like people can fix themselves. And we're really there to just witness that journey for them and offer support without judgment. Hey, I've been there too. So yeah, it can be a really unique thing. We pair well with clinical and things like that, but we really are a separate peer service that is peers helping peers. So it just is a unique relationship for people who really are just looking for a safe and judgment-free space to be able to talk about their challenges.
Yeah. And you had said that that also can lead into how does one start working here
yep.
as well.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah. That's, we've got, well, Bree herself was
yep.
a coach for quite a while for us before becoming a staff member.
And what determine is it the person themselves that come for the peer counseling that they determine when they feel like they're ready to move to a next level, or is it kind of mutual? Y'all kind of arrive at that place together.
Yeah, I think both. I
mm-hmm.
mean, you know, if somebody, you know, we just hired a coach. We had three positions open. We hired a coach and we hired a volunteer
mm-hmm.
intern for two of the positions, and then one position is somebody we just never knew before this. So
mm-hmm.
a lot of times it is the person. We had a volunteer here who worked here for a year, didn't want a job, And after a year of volunteering here, said, hey, maybe I do want a job, and applied for one of our positions and did that position for 2 years. And they just moved on to a new job. So a lot of the model is for people to come in, and if they feel they want to get a job here, it doesn't mean they're going to, of course, because we have to interview.
Yeah. So yeah, it is. It's a lot of mutual kind of deciding, you know, because we also have to consider the people that we serve, and we don't want to put someone into a position, whether that's a coach or staff or a facilitator, where their recovery isn't strong enough to, or just aged enough, I guess, where maybe the stress or the vicarious trauma, burnout, is going to put their own recovery at risk. So we really try to think about how is coaching going to affect this person? And they get to decide if they're in a spot in their own recovery that would allow them to be able to do this. But we definitely offer a lot of support, a lot of scaffolding around that, because we absolutely don't want to cause harm to either them or the person they're meeting with. If we've had people who have gone into coaching thinking that they were ready and they did fantastic, and then just something happened and they relapsed, and then kind of left four of their people hanging, you know, and of course they were struggling as well. So we have to kind of consider the whole picture of, you know, how do we minimize harm as much as possible?
Right. Absolutely. Like understanding where people are at all given times, what capacities there are, and just, you know, big disclaimers, right?
Yeah.
Okay. So, support groups, now that y'all have so many. Can y'all give me examples of some of them?
Yeah. One that we do is a DBT skills building class. So it's people who have been through DBT or going through DBT practicing the skills, often with clinical, like there's homework that's given and the therapy itself. So it's really giving people an opportunity to practice those skills that they, you know, were given as homework.
That's dialectical behavioral therapy,
right?
Yeah. Can you explain what that is real quick?
Yeah, it's basically a therapy that was built on taking what was most effective from other therapies, so like cognitive behavioral therapy, mindfulness-based stress reduction, that type of thing, and kind of taking the most effective skills and tools from those therapies put together. And it really breaks down kind of the emotional process that we go through, whether that's cognitive or emotional or, you know, just our thinking patterns or, and it breaks that down into smaller pieces and then looks at those smaller pieces and where we can have intersections and have kind of, what do I want to say, kind of a break or a space where we can do something different. And so that it's really just a space for people to be able to talk about those skills, how they're using those skills, and practice those.
That's really great for, like, if you're emotionally dysregulated.
Yes. And for distress tolerance, for mindfulness, and then interpersonal relationships.
We have a new group. It's an ADHD autistic group. It just started, like, a month ago.
Yeah.
And it is really well attended.
Nice.
Yeah. And then we have some reentry groups. We have formerly incarcerated sisters. We've got a couple parenting groups. We have a healing for healer on Thursday nights. Somebody just took over that group, so we'll see how that one turns out. What else do we have? Oh, we got reading groups. We got writing groups.
We have a music group.
A music group.
We have an art group. Creative
art
connections.
Group is very popular.
We have two board game groups, one for adults and then one for families.
We've got our, more or less, it's our unhoused group. We do that every morning from 9, and we just extended, it used to be 9 to 10, and we just extended the hours to 9 to 10:30, where people can come in and get warm. They can charge your phones, and that's pretty well attended group also.
Yeah, and some coffee. They were just watching Shrek this morning.
Yeah. So I kept seeing them in there, and they were doing really good. They just kind of were staring into space because they're not facilitating like we do our other groups. And so they were staring into space, and I thought, man, they don't ever get to watch movies. They don't ever get to, you know, wouldn't it be cool just to give them a movie? So I talked to the person who is pretty much the facilitator of that group. And that first off, they wanted to go to 10:30. They said that would be great. And then the movies, they love that. And so I went in this week and just let them know, hey, nothing too violent, da da da. And so their first pick was Wish. And
so
they watched Wish, and now they're watching Shrek.
Yeah.
So
nice.
They're watching movies that are, and it's so sweet. And but that's a really popular group.
Yeah.
We have anywhere from 3 to 8 people in that every morning. So
when you're existing outside of life, looking in, when you step into a place and you're watching just any old kind of movie like that, it's like reminds you that you're part of life and part of society and part of the world, and that in itself is very empowering.
Because we're not a day center.
No.
So we don't have people hanging out here. And so that gives people a space to come in and just kind
have
of
a minute.
Be like at a day center kind of, you know, situation. Mm-hmm. We are service center. So if you don't have an appointment, you can get some coffee and leave. But that's one that they can sit in for an hour and a half and just enjoy the morning, get warm.
Yeah. And we are services, appointment-based, you know, center. But we also offer coffee, tea, water, you know, to anyone that wants to come in, because we hope that when they're ready to enroll in services, if they're ever ready to enroll in services, that they know that we're a safe space for them to come in, get treated with dignity. We try to keep our space really clean. I know when I was receiving services, some places I would go in and feel like less of a person just because it didn't seem like they really cared about their space. And here it's really important to us to offer, you know, a clean, safe space that they can be treated with dignity. Everyone gets treated with dignity. And like I said, when they're ready to enroll in services, then we're here for them. And there's been some really great surprises that have come out of that where, you know, you don't want to think negative about people, but you just kind of are like, oh gosh, like I really hope this person gets out of the cycle. But with how bad the fentanyl epidemic is, it just sometimes you feel like you're losing hope that are people going to be able to find their way out. And we've had some really great surprises of people coming in and being like, I'm ready to access services. Mm-hmm. And people that you never thought would, you know, you hoped they would, but the reality of it is that fentanyl is just really, just a really nasty beast to deal with.
Tell me about the housing support.
Yeah, so we don't offer housing. We don't have funding associated with our housing services or anything like that. But like I said, it's a peer who has had housing instability, navigating the resources in the area for that housing. So we navigate a lot of the coordinated entry system, which is like our county's system to get into shelter or tiny homes or hotels or something like that. So it's just a lot of navigating vouchers or, you know, knowing what to do with them, or how do I look for an apartment that's only this much that, you know, the voucher will actually cover, and just kind of processing the frustrations around the system and not having enough housing.
Yeah. When somebody comes in, we do goals, you know, what is their goal? And then that housing person will work with them. Maybe they've had an eviction in their past. So how can they navigate to get housing with something like that? They may need ID, they may need a social security card. So really helping them navigate what is it they need, and then how can we direct them into the right direction to get those needs met.
That can also include services like legal aid and stuff like that.
Yes, yeah. So you never know what a person, you know, so we don't have funding. So it's really just supportive housing. We support mm-hmm. people in their quest for looking at barriers and what is keeping you from getting a house and trying to support them with that.
It's really wonderful and fabulous. There's another group that I've talked to that are supporting people with navigating some of those things as well. That would be Power. Are there any other groups that y'all know that do that as well that y'all connect with?
Most housing agencies in this town do FCS, Foundational uh-huh. Community Support. We do FCS. A lot of agencies, because it's a billable service, a lot of agencies do only FCS. You have to be FCS to be able to meet. We do anybody. We don't, that's the low barrier we have of being able to come here is we don't charge. All our services are free. And we don't say, oh, you don't have FCS. We can't work with you. Same with employment. We work with anybody who walks in the door who asks for housing support or employment support, education support. So a lot of the other agencies do FCS only, and they actually maybe have, there's a funding through FCS called TAP. We don't do that, but they do, and that's some housing money, but it's spent until January. So there are a lot of agencies that do housing, Family Support Center, they do a housing, they do coordinated entry. Yeah. You know, we've got PIPE does some kind of housing. And I mean, every agency does some kind of Capital Recovery Center. There's just so many. Oh, who just showed up today? The Community Action Council.
Yeah,
they're here meeting with Hannah right now.
Yeah.
They do FCS. So there's just like almost every agency in this town does some kind of housing practically.
Mm-hmm.
But
so
usually,
in a way, y'all kind of like fill in that little gap of that gray area where,
because generally that housing is linked to something else. So go through treatment, we'll get you housing afterwards, or go through, mental health.
It's like a string attachment where you have no strings attached.
Right.
So you have, in a way, you have more freedom.
Yeah.
Yes.
But in another way, y'all hands are tied.
Yes.
So it's like needing that. That's really cool, though. Definitely fills a space that has a need.
Yep.
Yeah. And so you mentioned something, your resource connections on your website fill that space, like with the housing, but like with other things as well.
Coaching does that, our housing, our employment.
Mm-hmm.
And if somebody comes in and needs somewhere to sleep tonight, they know how to send them to a place where they might be able to sleep tonight. Whether they want to go there or not is, you know, but we have those resources, you know, of where you could go sleep tonight.
Get a meal.
That's barrier free, where you can
get
a meal, where you can get a shower, things like that. So
it's so wonderful.
It
sounds like there isn't anybody you can't help. You know, a lot of times, like people, you know, I've heard this before, that people don't think that they would qualify for services, or they're self-conscious about it, or there's just all kinds of reasons why people don't want to go out for help, you know, and so can you think of any reason why there would be somebody, what circumstance would there be that you would not be able to help them?
Well, I think, so we had a family come in with a baby, unhoused. All we can do is send them to an agency that could help them. Do you see what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
So there's nobody we need to turn away without at least a resource, but there was nothing we could do for them other than give them a resource, you know? And it just so happened that day we were doing Section 8 sign-up. We hosted other agencies to come in, so because it was only open for, I think, 2 weeks.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so everybody had to hurry up and get signed up. So we hosted space that a lot of people could come in. And that family came in that day. So we were able to send them back here to get signed up for Section 8, which was phenomenal. But it's like, here, sign up for Section 8. So in a couple of years, you can have housing. It's difficult because there's just not enough housing, affordable housing out there.
And I would say, as far as like referrals, There are definitely people that, because we're not crisis responders, we're not a day center. So anyone in crisis is not suitable for our services at this time. But it's always a tomorrow is another day type of attitude.
Sure.
So we don't really believe in punishment. We believe in natural consequences. So, hey, you had a blow up in the lobby. Let's try again tomorrow, right? Oh, you blew up again in the lobby the next day. We're going to do a 1 week ban. So it's kind of a graduated natural consequence. But that doesn't mean, and there's very few people that as soon as we see them, we're like, nope, like we're trying to head them off and talk to them outside because they're just in a chronic state of escalation. But we've had people who, I can think of one in particular who was very violent towards Stephanie, actually, who came in and every time he would come in, it was just immediate escalation. He wasn't accessing any services and he just had a tough time. He came in a couple months ago and was like, I'm ready for services. And, you know, he's one of those that you never thought you would see that. You hoped for it. But so, you know, if even someone who, one of the few who have been banned, it's never permanent. And if they come in and say, I want to access these services, we're going to say, okay, let's do it. So yeah, anyone in crisis is not going to be, we're not going to be able to help them. Like the best we can do is try to see, like, do you want us to call someone for you? Do you want us to call crew or OHRS or, you know, trying to connect them to someone that can help them. And the other reason we wouldn't help somebody is if they didn't want it. So sometimes we get people coming in who are like brought in by their parent or, and we only do 18 and over, but like I just had this conversation last week with our fam nav who was saying, hey, the parent wants this for their adult child, but I don't know that the adult child wants it. And so we say no, because we would check in with that child and say, do you want these services? Your parent cannot meet with you unless there's a justifiable reason for it, because it has to be 100% autonomous. So it can't be court ordered. It can't be something where we would have to report to somebody with the exception of our funders, but that's different. So we wouldn't be, we can be part of a treatment plan, but we're not going to report to unless that person asks for some document from us. We can give it to that member, but we're not going to give it to the courts or to their therapist or to that without them asking for it specifically.
Mm-hmm.
So that would be another reason, is if it was not their decision, it has to be 100% autonomous. They have to want the service in order to be enrolled in it.
That's important information, especially like when you think about medical services at Axiom, because the whole medical system, they need you to fill out like release of information stuff.
Yep.
So you don't truck with that at all.
There's rare times that we do, but it would be at that person's request.
Mm,
and yeah. And we can do that, definitely do some ROIs, but it has to be that person's.
And some people want us to talk to their people.
Yeah. And that's great. That's fine.
Mm-hmm.
But how I normally navigate that is I will put it on our official letterhead. I will include my information on there and I will give it directly to the member. And then whatever they want to do with that document, they can do what they want.
That's an important thing to know.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Walk me through the actual literal process. If somebody says, okay, I'm ready to receive services.
Well, they'll come in the door and one of our front desk people will give them a member intake. And it's on an iPad,
mm-hmm.
and it's pretty simple to use. If they need help, one of our front desk volunteers will help, and we'll even, I've helped many people fill out the member intake. Whatever level of help they need to fill it out, we will help them with that. And once in there, there's all our services, and they get to mark which ones they want. And our front desk staff will explain to them what the services are, what are you signing up for. After that, an email goes to, if they ask for coaching, an email will go to our coach lead saying, hey, this person's asked for services. And then the coach lead within a couple days will call that person or contact that person, email if they have contact info. Sometimes they don't put contact information in there, and that's always difficult. They don't have contact information. So, but the whatever department they signed up for, we'll get a hold of them and start the process of them getting, like for coaching, start the process of them getting a coach. That's kind of how it works. And that's true with every department.
And the front desk knows that if they don't have contact information, we have drop-in hours for most of our services on Fridays. So they can come in and drop in and meet with that lead and talk to them about what the services are if they want to enroll and how can we get a hold of you or setting up appointments or something like that. So we can still work with them if they don't have contact information.
Can you say that again when the drop-in is on Friday?
It's Fridays
11 to 1,
yeah. Mm-hmm.
Do you partner with any other resources?
So many. Named some of them.
Earlier, yeah.
We try to partner. So we try to situate ourselves as kind of a peer hub for providers. Mm-hmm. We do a lot of the training for the peers at other organizations. They attend our Recovery Coach Academy, and we've trained so many from multiple providers, because our service area covers Thurston, Mason, Lewis, and Grace Harbor. So we've even gone to other counties to do recovery coach academies there. And so we try to position ourselves as somewhere that people can come and feel comfortable. And we used to do kind of a provider get together where all the peers could get together and, you know, get support from each other. That's kind of on pause for now, but
yeah, we have a lot of agencies when they get new hires, they call and ask me when's the next Recovery Coach Academy because they want their new hires to come to, they want all their staff to be trained here. And then your de-escalation training.
Yeah, I do trauma-informed de-escalation and crisis intervention, and it's really for peers and for volunteers because our front desk is 100% manned by volunteers. And we do have a front desk coordinator that's always around up front, Monday through Friday. The training is really geared towards like bite-sized, accessible things that people can do in a crisis situation. We do pronoun training, the importance of pronouns and what that looks like in our work. We do some other training. So anytime we have a training, it's really well attended. And then we absolutely work with all the resources that we can possibly find, you know, to help navigate through whether it's housing or our other program managers, just like a wizard at different programs and just staying on top of it. Because it's just a constant change that, you know, you can have a big old resource list, but then you have to update it almost like weekly or monthly because funding runs out or this program's changing their criteria for taking referrals or this program's full. And so it's just this constant updating of the resources in the area. So our front desk, like I said, is manned 100% by volunteers. So that's just a constant like update as well to work with all of these programs. And then we also offer space. A lot of the programs that are out there, like Arrest, Jail, and Alternatives, or like HEN, or we were having someone that was doing coordinated entry. So a lot of we have crossover, right? We have members that are accessing those services. And so sometimes providers will come here. We have an office that's called a provider office. And they can meet with our members to kind of have one-on-one FaceTime with them. So that's kind of a cool thing that gives people face-to-face time in a world where it's just a lot of phones or emails or forms or whatever that's hard to navigate. So, we try to include outside providers as much as possible with what we do.
An outside provider used our space last week to do a training with their staff. MI training. I think there was almost 20 people in here or something.
And we offer our space to providers to be able to do that because it brings people in the door to get, you know, I think being in our space really helps people understand what we do. And so offering these trainings for free and really connecting with providers, I think it's something that Thurston County does really well. If you go to other counties, there's a lot of gatekeeping with services, and it's interesting because we're all helping the same community. We're all helping the same people. So we need to connect as much as possible to be able to, you know, provide what's out there. And yeah, that's always been an interesting, weird thing that I find strange.
Like the training that was last week, they actually wanted three days, and the dates that they wanted, two of them didn't work. They could have changed to different dates, but they were kind of locked into those dates. So they just used us for one of those, found a space somewhere else.
What do you do to get in and have a space to use for something?
They just get a hold of me or one of us. Yeah. One
of the management team. Just like, oh, we've got this room available at this time.
Yeah, we have to look and see if we have it.
What is the capacity that you have? How many rooms?
We've got three group rooms, support group rooms. We've got two coach rooms. We've got the big training room and then all our offices.
Are y'all able to provide like any kind of materials or whatever? Do y'all have like already like a whiteboard or?
Yeah, we have like some easels that we use for our trainings. We always have fidget toys for people who, you know, in our trainings. So we can always bring those out. We have markers and, you know, there's like basic supplies that we can offer. More so like with food and stuff like that, like we can offer coffee and tea just like we would normally would. And then if there's any food or anything like that, like they would provide that and any like specialty supplies that they might need. But yeah, we do have a big whiteboard and like individual easels that have the big like pads on it, and we have the
there's an overhead projector.
We have a big projector
with speakers.
Wow. Yeah.
So it's a really nice space for, we have some bigger, like there's an NA meeting that meets in here. There's two more groups that are going to be moving back here. They started out in the meeting room up front and they've outgrown that space. So now they're going to start using the big training room. And we have Zoom capabilities in two of our group rooms and in the in here, the big training room. And yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and we have, to talk about our agencies, we have a provider appreciation that this would be our second annual. We didn't have one the first year we opened, but ever since last year, we started it. And we have it this year in December, where we already we have 67 RSVPs from different agencies around here. So we've been prepared. That's what the lights are about, is we're getting ready for our provider appreciation. We're getting there. We have a little more decorating to do. And
yeah, just to say thank you to the providers that are in the area. And we do like an auction, and it's all, or a raffle, not an auction. We do a raffle and have food. We're doing, last year and this year, we're doing fry bread, tacos, and then we also make medicine to hand out at the provider appreciation. So like balms and salves and things like that.
I'm seeing over there, I'm in the, what is this room that we're in?
Big training room.
This is the big, it is a very big room.
Yeah.
Lots of beautiful windows and lighting. I see on the table over there, there's some jars with some liquid in it.
Yeah,
that's the end of it.
That's the end.
Yeah, we have a few more to make.
Oh,
but
wow.
We have almost three boxes like this.
Yeah.
Little salves.
Yep. So here you can have this one. So this one has eucalyptus, peppermint, lavender, olive oil, shea butter, and beeswax.
Oh,
so
that smells so nice.
Chloe made this. So all the staff decided what they wanted their medicine to be.
Mm-hmm.
And we had all the plant medicine. And
this is like
they
a
made their
rub.
Babies. They put the plant medicine in with the oil and took care of that for weeks. Like, I think 2 months, 8 weeks.
You'll see like in our offices, everyone has their babies that they're like putting good intentions into and healing. And
yeah. And then,
what is the babies?
The plant. Medicine in the oil.
I would give everybody knows what this calendula, this is what calendula does. So people could decide what kind of healing they want to give the providers that are going to come to our appreciation. And so this one, they wanted to make something for anxiety.
Yeah.
And so that's what, so they put that intention in their baby for 2 months.
Uh-huh.
And then yesterday we cooked it in a balm, and that's what they put into everything they did. was because they want to heal people's anxiety, or at least offer some healing for your anxiety. So that one was one of my staff members, and they called it Chill Bomb.
Oh, I love that. Chill
so
bomb.
It means kick back. Don't be anxious. So, yeah, we've got 3 boxes like this so far. So everybody will be able to have a couple the night of.
And your volunteers make them.
Staff. Me and my staff,
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
I taught them last year, and this year they were whizzes at it.
I used to make stuff like that all the time. I still do. It's busy, you know.
Yeah.
I've made a burn staff before.
Yeah.
It makes
really
it easy
cool.
when it's part of work.
Yes.
To be able to do it.
That's facts.
Yeah. Because if we were all trying to do it in our personal lives,
extra time,
it would be really hard.
Yeah.
We wouldn't be able to make something, you know, that big of an amount. But we just take a whole day, and that's what we did all day yesterday.
Finding reasons to apply in your work to do something like that.
Yeah.
And it's very bonding for our staff.
Yeah.
That's wonderful. Y'all have mentioned that you have other locations. Tell me about that. Where else is there a Peer?
Well, I'll tell you all the services. We've got Peer Seattle, the start. After Peer Seattle, 5 years ago, they opened up Peer Spokane. Mm-hmm. And so they do exactly what we do, mm-hmm. pretty much. They have a different charter than us. Like Peer Seattle is LGBTQIA+. That's their charter. Peer Spokane has a different charter. Then Peer Kent came along, and Peer Kent is heavy justice. They're in the courts, they're in the libraries, so they've got a huge program.
So, like, for if somebody here in Olympia like needed like extra legal support, they might go to the one.
No, because
it's
they
just
actually
where you're
put
at.
Peers into the courts.
Oh.
So you would have to be a part of the courts there. So Peer Kent, if you just walk in, you're going to get the service we give.
Uh-huh.
But if you're a part of drug court, you're Peer Kent, you'll get a peer from Peer Kent. So they've got a whole program for the courts, and they're in municipal court, they're in drug court, they're in all kinds
all
of courts.
Therapeutic courts.
Plus, they also have all the library. There's 4 or 5 libraries that have peers in it. Peer Kent manages that. They manage the court stuff. They manage the library stuff. So yeah, their focus is different. But if you're just to walk in for services, they have these same services.
Yeah.
Family Navigator,
okay.
All of it.
Okay.
Yeah. Same with Spokane, has these services. And then Peer Seattle, same thing, same services. They might have, I know they got an AIDS outreach, HIV AIDS outreach. So they have some extra services, same as we have a couple extra services that aren't on the core service. Then Peer Washington came before Kent. They need an admin. And so Peer Washington is the complete admin that runs all our sites. Then Peer Olympia came along with Peer Workforce Development. And they're writing the CPC new curriculum. They do the CPC trainings. They do all kinds of they train the cops. They train all kinds of people.
That sounds a lot like DSHS Worksource Solutions when you say it. It's what makes me think of. Is there any connection?
No. They're more with Healthcare Authority and Department of Health. They're
work
really close with them because of all the rules around the new bill, 5555, and writing that new curriculum for the certified peer counselors. Mm-hmm. So that's going to change a lot after the first of the year. But that's their big focus right now. Mm-hmm. And then there were an ombuds program in all 10 regions. The way that ombuds worked is each region, an agency would have an ombud, but there wasn't a lot of coordination between all 10 regions. Well, our CEO got the contract for that. So now we, Peer Washington owns all 10 regions. And so it's called Office of Behavioral Health Advocacy. It's not called Ombuds anymore. And we have that contract. And so we're in all 10 regions, and it's one person taking the phone calls and transferring it to the regions. And so it's very connected, and it didn't used to be. So that's kind of cool.
And I have a question about the UMBUD. So to clarify, I was a certified nursing assistant for like the last 9 years. So I'm familiar with ombudsman because of that.
Yeah.
And so when we talk about ombudsman, is that the same kind of ombudsman?
It's not called ombudsman no more.
No, no, it's not.
Yeah.
It's called OBHA.
OBHA, yeah.
What's that spelling
for? Office of Behavioral Health Advocacy.
Office of Behavioral Health Advocacy.
Yeah, okay. And that's Pure Washington.
All right.
Yeah.
Wow.
We own that now. And then we started RNP, Recovery Navigator Program, and I'll tell you what I know of it. I haven't gone to really check it out, but it's when the cops are on the street and they need, like, they're coming to you and you're either in crisis or you're drunk or maybe you're high, but you don't really need to go to jail. They can call the Recovery Navigator people and they can come and meet up and take care of this person, maybe put them in a hotel for the night, get them to the hospital, what have you. So it's a rough job because you're on call all the time, but it has grown so much. I think there's about 20, 30 employees in two sites. We have South and North. So one's in Seattle and one's in Federal Way.
Does the street cop who encounters such an injury, does he actually call?
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh, they're so busy. Yeah. They're so busy.
Yeah. It took a minute to like get traction,
yeah.
But law enforcement is so overwhelmed with calls that are not law enforcement, but there's nobody else to call for that kind of crisis intervention or, you know, it's kind of a diversion program to keep people out of jails and the justice system. So if someone's having a mental breakdown or, you know, just having a hard time, then the referral can go out to RNP from law enforcement, but also from community members. So it's open to anyone to be able to call and say, hey, there's this person who's not doing very well, and they can respond.
Yeah. And in Thurston County, it's called LEAD. There's a program lot like that called LEAD. It's law enforcement, something diversion. I don't know what the A is. It's not my program, but in Thurston County, we have a LEAD, LEAD. The LEAD program is similar to the Recovery Navigator program. I think it's the same funding. Maybe.
So this makes me think about like a few years ago when we had the pandemic and all of this, and there was the whole defund the police thing. It kind of makes me feel like it was that idea was generated at that time because people were wanting like social services to get involved and stuff like that. And so is that any connection to that?
Oh, I don't know.
I don't think there's a connection directly to defund the police.
No.
I would say it's more a connection to fund social services.
Mm.
Just keeping law enforcement out of it. And that's kind of, you know, Pure Washington doesn't necessarily have an opinion one way or the other as far as that goes. They stay neutral. But definitely to the idea of like, we need more funding for programs just like this so that people, I mean, law enforcement's overwhelmed, jails are overwhelmed, right? Like, it's just an overwhelming system where we're asking people who are not social service providers or necessarily like mental health responders to respond to a situation that's not appropriate for them to respond to, right? And in fact, their presence can actually escalate that. But it's definitely looking at like, okay, where can peer services fit into that as far as social services and the support that we can offer to, divert people from the justice system, because that's just more barriers.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And the last is Washington Peer Network. And that's it's new. It's probably been around for less than a year. And it's a place where it's a network where all peers can go to one place and connect and find out things. So it's still pretty new. If you have an iPhone, you can get it on your iPhone, the app. If you're on an Android, you can go to the website, Washington Peer Network and become a member. It's free and you can get all kinds of information and connect with peers all over the state.
It's kind of like a
statewide.
Yeah, kind of like a social media in a way where you can like meet people and chat with people on your page. And then there's trainings and
jobs
that are posted. And so it's just kind of this growing, like it's exactly that, a peer network.
Yeah.
And I want to clarify the language. You say peers Canada's. Are you talking about people who are working for different peer organizations, or are you talking about like just people?
Peers, both. Yeah. So the Washington Peer Network, anybody who's a peer, working in the field or want to work in the field, you may have a CPC, you may not have a CPC, you may be a recovery coach. It's a place that you don't even have to be a CPC or anything. If you want to be part of this network, if you wanted to,
now
you could go and just see what's going on with the peer world. Mm. Maybe you've had an interest of maybe what it means or what's going on, or you want information or what's happening next, or how hard is it going to be for me to sign up for a CPC next year when the rules change? You can find out that kind of information there.
Okay. Yeah. So it's you're using the word peer is more as I too am a provider of some sort. Whereas the distinction, you know, the difference is, and then someone looking for, who would be looking for services.
Yeah, that's a peer is anybody with lived experience.
Okay.
And that could be any kind of lived experience. It could be that you were unhoused at one time and you have this, you know, great story of how you battled that. And that can be very beneficial to someone else. That makes
tell
you a peer.
I am definitely a peer.
Yeah.
Definitely got some lived experiences.
Yeah.
We can all be peers, just whatever.
Let's see. And then tell me about volunteering here. What is the experience for volunteers?
Yeah, so it's really up to the volunteer. So we have three types of volunteers. So technically our coaching is considered volunteering. They do get a stipend to help mitigate costs for them coming down here, whatever, gas or whatever. Our facilitators are volunteers, our group facilitators, and then our front desk volunteers. So, and that's the biggest pool probably is our front desk volunteers. So anyone who is interested in volunteering goes through a brief screening. And then we don't do background checks or anything like that. They start as soon as we can get them onboarded. So usually that same week we're trying to get them onboarded. So, you know, they don't lose interest or have to wait a while. Often, like I had one person call me last week and they were like, I really need something to do for my recovery. And he came in last night. And so, it's usually a pretty quick turnaround. We do a brief, like one day onboarding. It's like a 2-hour onboarding. And then they're at our front desk learning. We always pair them with someone that is, you know, knows the systems really well, because there is a little bit of admin stuff. And then we talk about, you know, peer principles, how we treat people when they come in here, why it's important for us to treat everyone with dignity, and to treat them as human. And then whatever volunteers are here to learn. So some people just want to give back to the community. They've had well-paying jobs or whatever, and they just want to give back. Some people are here to learn skills. So maybe they're re-entering or haven't learned certain skills about just what it is to work. And so, you know, we try to help build that self-efficacy of like, hey, like, it's okay that you're late, you're volunteering, that's totally fine. But just know outside of here, like, they're going to expect you to be on time. And just kind of building those expectations. They are volunteers. So of course, we're not like, how dare you, you know, like, they're volunteers, so they can do what they want. But and then we also offer intern opportunities. So we'll go through Equus or CCAP, or we've had Vallejo before they kind of changed their program. And that is more structured. And we look at kind of what they are looking to do. Most of the people that come to us are wanting to build some sort of experience with peer work. And so we have interns that have learned how to manage a grant where I sit with them and, you know, the things I can share with them, I'll go through and show them how to do the assessment or whatever that might be. Or if they want to learn how to build a program, we can do projects for them where they come up with their own project. You know, it's really self-directed, again, on their part of what do you want to learn and what can I provide that is going to help you learn that. And that can go with the volunteers too. So it really is self-directed, you know, checking in with them. What is it you want to get out of this? And that's kind of how we cater towards that.
About the screening process.
Yeah, the screening process. So because we are LGBTQ, that's in our blood. We also, in our charter, we focus on folks of color. We have a grant that is for people of color, one of our employment grants. And we also work with a lot of military families. Most of who we see that are vets are folks who have felt like the traditional resources for vets or active military are not what they want to access. So we'll see a lot of vets who are trans or, you know, gender neutral or whatever that might be. And then we also serve rural areas, like I said. So we get a variety of people, and we really want to create a safe space. So we're very careful about, you know, we'll ask, are you comfortable honoring someone's pronouns? And if the answer is no, they're going to cause harm here because we have a lot of folks that come in that use they, them, or alternative pronouns. We'll ask some questions, you know, about tell us experiences you have working with a diverse community or, you know, so we kind of want to screen to ensure that the people we have at our front desk are representing peer principles and are representing our charter. And more so not causing harm to the people that are coming through the door. That's not to say that there, you know, isn't a place for people who don't want to honor pronouns. It's just not here. So they have their own experiences that determine that for them or that, you know, they've, for whatever reasons, but it would definitely cause harm here. So, yeah.
So that's pretty much all the screening is.
Yeah.
Is like, how do you feel about what we do?
Yep.
Are you a good fit? That kind of
yeah.
thing. It isn't like... You said you don't do background checks.
Nope.
Yeah.
Nope.
Okay.
We do for staff, but that's it. And even then, like most of the time, it's a case by case basis. Most of our staff have some sort of record or some, you know, something in their past that can create an issue with a background check. So even then, it's like it's always a case by case basis of, and most people are fine. Yeah.
Personal discernment and judgment, you know,
yeah.
and being reasonable and
yeah.
that kind of thing.
Yeah.
Well, that makes it feel like there's like a lot less stress for
yeah.
people around that who are trying to make a change in their life
yeah.
and they might feel self-conscious about such a thing.
Yeah.
Oh, screening and alarm bells. Oh
yeah.
my God, I'm going to be screened, you know?
Yeah.
And so that really like lowers a lot of barriers there.
Yeah.
That's really good.
Yeah, we try to be as low barrier as possible, mm-hmm. but we do have to consider the harm that's done.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we are absolutely here to teach and to offer a safe space to learn. You know, I came from a very small town where I came out with some ideologies that I no longer identify with or no longer agree with. And so, you know, we want to offer a safe space for that learning. That's why we do pronoun training and things like that. But, you know, we also have to consider who's walking in our door in very vulnerable states and, you know, to minimize that harm as much as possible.
Right, right. And then I interviewed y'all a while back for my class project.
Yep.
And so I remember that y'all have like mental health support for volunteers.
For staff, we
staff,
do.
Staff.
Yes. Yep. So our staff, because it's one of the only jobs I can think of that asks us to relive our traumas on a daily basis and utilize those stories to help others and to consistently hear stories that are activating to our own experiences. Our Peer Washington offers healthcare. Our staff get healthcare for free. As far as individuals, families are different, but when you have dependents, but for individuals, it's free. And then we also offer, I think it's 9 sessions or something like that. I can't remember exactly, but through a mental health behavior, like you can call the number and talk to a counselor or therapist. If there's something that is upsetting you, or, you know, if you're having a tough time with the election results, or you're having a tough time with, you know, something that happened, maybe you're in a car accident or something like that, or maybe you're having mental health struggles, right? So you can call and utilize that service as well, because it's a service that isn't there for a long time, but it's something you can do right away, because mm-hmm. a lot of times, as we know, finding behavioral health services up. Is... Yeah. It can take a very long time to find a therapist or a counselor. So.
So what are some job opportunities that might be available currently? Are y'all looking for any?
We just filled like 3 positions. Three of our people went on to bigger, better things, which is a great problem to have. It's like our number one reason for losing volunteers and staff, because we, you know, it's great for entry level peer work here. And then there's some opportunity moving into management. Our volunteer coordinator went to work for Hope and Healing Clinic, a MAC clinic. Our coaching lead left to work for the Family Support Center, doing amazing things. And so, yeah, we just filled all of those positions, too, like Stephanie said, where we knew they'd volunteered here or had coached here. That's generally how that looks when we do fill positions. And then one, every once in a while, we just find someone really special that we don't know, but would like to give an amazing opportunity to. So, yeah.
Do y'all take any donations, or yes. What do you tell me about donations that y'all
it's
accept?
On the website. We do have donation envelopes here, but mostly we have somebody who sends a monthly donation here every month, and then I put it in the bank. And mm-hmm. But Peer Washington, the website has donation links to any of our programs.
And that's financial. Do y'all accept anything else stuff?
It depends on what it is. Yeah. Like coffee, things like that we use every day. Yes. We don't distribute from here. The reason we don't do that is when we first started, we had like some sleeping bags and some tents for our housing service. But the problem was we would run out and people would still come in asking, and it was just kind of re-traumatizing them that, nope, we can't meet your need, yeah. you know, over and over again. And so we stopped distributing from here because we would rather send them somewhere that can do it whenever they access that service, like Salvation Army or something like that, mm-hmm. who does that, right? So we've kind of taken a look at our services and what we can provide for everybody at any time. And that's what we stick with, our services. So yeah, distribution, we would much rather have their needs met when they need that need met, instead of coming in and having to be told no again.
We got 4 gigantic boxes of socks.
Yeah.
And we give them to agencies that distribute socks.
Yeah.
And, you know, instead of distributing them ourselves, because yeah, we don't distribute here.
Okay, cool. Is there anything else that y'all would like the community to know that we did not discuss?
I think it's really important, like I said earlier, come into our space. I mean, come see what we do and get involved, you know, whether that's as a volunteer, as a coach, whether that's as a recovery needing services. It really does make a whole lot more sense when you come in and can see our space, and we're always happy to give tours and invite people into our space, and, you know, access our support groups, and, you know, just that we're here for wherever that person is at. Like, we are here to meet you where you're at. So
yeah,
I think,
and
yeah,
we're not, it's not reportable. You know, a lot of people think that we're like a treatment center that have, you know, treatment groups, and we're not. It's completely autonomous. Anybody, it's what they want, not what we have no opinion on what you should be doing with your life.
Yep. Yeah.
Do you say that again? Because that's just so good to hear.
Yeah, we have no opinion on what you should do with your life.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Autonomy, man.
Yeah.
People taking control of their own lives,
yep,
and making their own choices,
yep,
and you support that.
Yep, it's none of my business what they want to do. I'm only here to support what their choice is.
Yep. Yeah. Yep. And you could tell us your goal is to
be an astronaut.
Yeah, be an astronaut or time warp to 1928. And we would be like, cool, where do you want to start? Like, what support do you need around that? You know, it's whatever that person needs. And we're really just here to offer a judgment-free place to be able to exist.
Yeah. And try to train people that, you know, we've had people in our trainings be like, well, they can't be in it. Who cares? How do you know they can't?
Yeah.
You know? Just let's do step one.
Yep.
Let's do step one. And maybe in a year, they'll be like, you know what? I don't want to be an astronaut anymore. I want to be this. And it's like, okay, where do we start from there? And that's really what Paralympia is about.
Thank you for listening to Resource Report's interview with Peer Olympia's site director, Stephanie Tompkins, and program manager, Bree McNeely. To explore the information provided here, check out their website, peerolympia.org. You can also call them at 360-522-9060 or email info@peerolympia.org. Of course, they would love to see you. You can find them at 522 Franklin Street Southeast at the corner of Legion Way and Franklin downtown near the Olympia Transit Center. Due to time constraints, some parts of the interview were cut out, but will be added back in for the full version available on rss.com/podcast/resource-report. And of course, our zine format transcript. Check out our next show on New Year's Day, when we will hear about a rehab center called First Things First. You won't want to miss it. That's it for today's resource report, produced by Pathways to Agency. At Pathways to Agency, we are driven by the belief that everyone should have the tools and support to achieve their goals and thrive in their communities. Our mission is to bridge the gaps in understanding, accessibility, and trust by connecting individuals to resources and sharing information and processes that can lead to personal and community growth. Resource Report offers information about existing and emerging nonprofits and resource organizations. Find out more at pathwaystoagency.org. Also, for up to 2 weeks, you can still listen to today's show by going to chaosradio.org and finding the archive in the programs drop-down in the menu. You can also find our shows archived indefinitely on rss.com/podcast/resource-report. Chaos Radio is not responsible or liable for any views or opinions expressed in the interviews conducted by Resource Report. Till next time, and thanks for listening.